Well, I work on cosmological tests of modified gravity and dark energy. It's mainly I use observational data to constrain dark energy and modified gravity. So I hope my tools and my experience can be helpful to do with our model, ever-present lambda. Okay. The outline of the talk are three points. The first is a brief introduction to MGCam and CosmoMC, which is the tool I use to do gravity tests and dark energy tests. And in this part, I will introduce the key diagnostics to test gravity and dark energy. Yes. I'll introduce what diagnostic I was using to test if gravity deviates from GR and dark energy, equation of state of dark energy, W deviates from 1. And then I will show some results based on my previous work using these two programs, CAM and CosmoMC, to you, my previous work on this. And in this part, the two works are how do we probe gravity and dark energy with observations? My first work, fitting the data with modified gravity models. And the second one is the work I'm currently working on to combine theory and observation to reconstruct dark energy and modified gravity from observations. It's in here. It's in here. And the last point is what is needed for ever-present lambda. I will say something about if you want to constrain or test ever-present lambda, what I need from you. Okay? And here's the map of it.
Lucy Pivo,
are you there?
I think it's muted.
Oh.
We cannot hear back.
Oh, we cannot hear back. Can you unmute it for a second?
I wait.
Can you unmute the Nosy Pivo's speaker? Because most people, the person who got them, she worked very much.
She used CAM very heavily, and she, in fact, she had to rewrite part of CAM in order to accommodate the ever-present lambda. So
to be fair, this talk doesn't have a lot of CAM.
Oh, it doesn't have a lot of CAM.
It doesn't have a lot of nuts and bolts. It's one concept.
Go on.
Yes. It's okay.
Okay.
First, if she were here physically,
yeah.
Then
should I go ask them to unmute? I think I know where they control.
Okay, that would be great. Thanks.
Move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. First it's a brief introduction to CAM and CosmoMC. Well, before introducing the two programs. Well, first I need to introduce the key diagnostics of dark energy. Well, the first equation, as you can see here, we define dark energy here, the proportion of dark energy times its evolution, x of a here. And if rho dark energy is positive, then we can solve the equation to get its solution like this. So for lambda, W of z is equal to minus 1. This is always equal to 1. So that's lambda. Okay.
So these omegas are constants the way you've set it up?
Yes.
What does R stand for? Just something, radiation.
Yes.
Or relativity.
Where's the curvature?
Where's the curve?
Where's the curve you got?
Zero.
A to the minus 2.
It's gone.
Where is it?
It's gone. It's gone.
What do you mean it's gone?
We ignore it.
You can't edit. It's not preventing it. it's not playing an important role.
I just have a comment for the later part. For this model one, anyway, W is not a natural, it's not a very well-defined parameter because it's a very jagged kind of function. And so,
oscillating.
Yeah, it's even worse. It's like Brownian motion. So.
Yeah, so we don't use W necessarily. A lot of the old work is based on W, but in the more recent work, we don't. We just work directly. Thanks.
Yeah.
Just a lot of work that Jen did before was doing W's.
Okay, and key diagnostics of modified gravity. Well, in the presence of inhomogeneous matter distribution, we have these two potentials in the line element. Okay. And if we use the conservation of energy momentum, and we can calculate, we can have these two conservation equations of matter, okay, here. So phi n plus I are in here. Okay, to close the equation system, you see phi psi delta and theta. There are four functions in these two equations. So we need two more equations to solve them. Okay. In GR, we have Poisson equation and anisotropy equations in here. Okay, so in GR, these two potentials, they are equal. So for matter, the second equation is equal to zero. So this is in GR. And if there is modified gravity and we write these two equations.
Is theta some expansion? What is theta exactly?
What is theta?
Oh, it's velocity dispersion.
Velocity dispersion.
Yes, this is matter density and its velocity.
Is the fluctuation in the matter density?
Delta rho over rho.
Delta rho over rho.
Yes.
And theta is
velocity.
It's the delta t zero I.
Oh, so why is it not a vector then?
Because it's a response to the gradient and the potential. So it's always in the direction of the gradient. So that
I see.
It's the divergence of the velocity.
Okay.
So it is an expansion kind of thing. It's the divergence of the velocity.
Divergence.
Expansion rates. Like in the Rajendra equation.
As geodesic expansion. Is it like that, or?
So, no, I don't, not in that sense. So velocity literally is caused by gradients in the gravitational potential. So the direction of the velocity
is fixed.
Is always fixed.
But is theta just
so,
the proportionality between the velocity and the gradients?
So theta.
What's the magnitude of the velocity?
Theta is something like the. It would be divergence, I suppose. Because if you dimensionally see, it goes as k squared psi. So it should be something like k times the gradient.
So maybe it is.
It's a measure of the.
So maybe it is the divergence.
It's like the average.
So it is like the right chart, the theta and the right chart equation.
Yeah. But it's literally just the same. So it's the equation you get from conservation when you use for the T0i component.
Okay, you compare this one and this one. So in GR, mu of AK is always equal to 1. Okay, and we call it G effective. Okay, you can time mu and g. It's equivalent to an effective Newton constant in here. And if it's gr, then sigma is equal to 1. In gr, both mu and sigma, they are not a function of A or K. They're not a function. But in modified gravity, they could be a function of A and K.
Sorry, just kidding. I forgot. What is K here?
Wave number.
Wave number?
Yes.
You're putting in those.
And what was delta, capital delta?
Oh, it's co-moving density contrast. Right.
It's delta rho.
It's delta rho. And
in a particular gauge.
In a particular, but the little delta is also delta rho over rho, or that was always
the... So the delta...
Rho
delta,
delta
is
equal to... Rho delta is equal to rho delta plus something. V is here, right? Over, I think sigma or sigma is
like
here.
H, V, K.
And this is always equal to zero.
So little delta is the delta in a Newtonian gauge or conformal gauge, and big delta is in a co-moving gauge. But on sub-horizon scales, gauge becomes irrelevant. But so
yep.
So anyway, that's
a question.
So the effective modified terms are in those last two equations, right?
Yes.
So the effective modified gravity.
Yes.
Could you have actually just included them in the dark energy term? And just assume that it satisfies energy conditions. Just bundle it all into one effective term.
You mean effective dark energy term?
In the first equation,
mm-hmm.
Modified gravity terms would only add an extra term to the equation.
Right.
And you could bundle them in to the dark energy term. It's just a definition of what the dark energy term is.
Could, but
it's more effective to do it this way.
It's not necessary. So there, some people do.
Yeah, okay.
So you could think of testing properties of the effective dark energy fluid,
yeah,
as opposed to testing the connection between matter and gravity. So this is checking for any difference in the way density of matter sources,
yeah,
gravitational potentials.
So the way that you parameterize the two things is slightly different.
It answers sort of different questions,
yeah,
that you want to learn.
Yeah.
So this way is easier to map onto particular theories that we had in mind, like scalar tensor theories, for
mm-hmm.
example. If you look at scalar theories, you can derive an expression for sigma.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so now we have mu and sigma.
So I guess, so what you're saying is that if you looked at one particular modification of the Lagrange, this would be sort of a class of things that you would get out of that? Or
this is general. So this is pure phenomenology. You're saying,
mm-hmm.
we're going to allow for example, equivalence principle between relativistic and non-relativistic matter to be modified, which can happen, for example, in scalar tensor theory,
yeah,
in a well-prescribed way. But we can test in general whether there is any evidence for that. And if we have more data, we could actually check if it actually is not just different from one, but also obeys the same functional dependence as predicted by theories. But this is more general than any particular theory. It's phenomenology.
Okay, so
more general, but no curvature.
But the perturbative, you could add curvature.
I don't think you can.
Fourier numbers, I guess you're saying they would become discrete?
No. If you write something down in Newtonian gauge,
yeah,
the curvature has to be very small for that Newtonian gauge to be valid on a patch that you're going to do integration on. can't do a Fourier analysis if the curve is just not zero. So there's some implicit assumptions in there that it's not clear to me immediately how it would change
the Fourier analysis would have, you can still do it, but it would have to be on a different, instead of on a flat.
That would be eigenfunction analysis,
yeah,
not Fourier analysis.
Fourier modes on the,
but
if it's closed, for example.
Yeah, it would be Fourier modes, it would be eigenfunctions.
But
yeah,
in the limit of large curvature, it's practically world practical purposes.
Let me disclose my bugbear.
Okay.
Because you can probably see I've got something in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
What you're doing is fine, right? I've got no problems with it. But there are a lot of analyses that do parameter estimation, and at the end they predict what the curvature is. that's the thing that really bugged me. So I just like to see these things stated up front. Makes me feel more comfortable.
Is it the case that the modified gravity excludes a cosmological constant by definition, or it allows both?
Oh, on the background, we use lambda.
You do use lambda?
Yes.
You can, with or without.
Yes.
But I thought the motivation for the modified gravity, I never quite understood the motivation, but I thought it was in order to have dark energy without lambda.
That's dark matter, isn't it?
What?
Well, that's sorry, I'm getting.
We're kind of moving orthogonal.
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
I can tell you what the motivation is.
Okay.
You can ask me during my talk.
For example, in this work, on the background, I use lambda. For this one, to reconstruct dark energy, then it's not lambda.
So, go ahead.
But it could be, couldn't it? It could effectively be a constant in some theories, couldn't it? Or
exactly. So a lot of modified gravity theories effectively have a lambda, but on top of it, they also have modified Einstein-Hilbert action. So you have new forces, new fields. So the motivation indeed comes from that part of it. There is another motivation, but in practice, most of them have lambda hidden somewhere.
I see. So just one final comment, just a little question, because it's not fair on the speaker. in the models we're interested in, the focus, the ever-present lambda, that would be in the dark energy term, right?
At least that's how it looks. I don't know, because we don't have a complete theory.
Okay.
It's not even obvious to me, but that's not maybe for now, but like if it's legal to put it on the right-hand side of the Friedman equation. Like it's sort of, seems like even the validity of the Friedman equation needs to be
discussed. Absolutely clear.
Yeah.
So that's the question, I guess, right? That the end, that's what he's going to get to.
No, I don't know. Okay, sorry.
Okay, CAM. CAM is a program. It's short for code for anisotropies in the CMB.
No, I don't short for Cambridge.
Oh no, not.
Also written at Cambridge.
Okay. It's designed to calculate CMB spectra and any other two-point correlation functions. So. And input cosmological parameters, initial conditions, initial power spectrum. I mean, if we input these things to CAM, then it will calculate these observables for us, the theoretical prediction. Okay, here are the equations in it and its output. Input cosmological parameters, initial conditions, and then it output physical quantities, cosmological parameters, observables.
So the equations are just Einstein equations then?
Yes, and conservation equation.
So conservation equation, so yes, you basically,
yes.
Okay, so now that's where you would modify things.
Yes, yes, you're right.
Most people had to rewrite part of it.
Yeah.
So you input, then you press a button.
I.
You press a button. And does it write the paper for you as well? Submit it?
No, no.
No?
No, that's too simple.
It makes nice clothes.
Okay. And MG is modified growth. Okay, it's developed by a group of people. And input, I can input the previous two functions I introduced, mu and sigma. Okay. And also I can input W.
Or X,
yes.
So when you input mu and sigma, they're functions in principle of A and
K.
The functions of A and Fourier mode,
yeah.
Or each Fourier mode.
So when you say you input those things, you would like do some sort of parameter, sort of expansion.
Yes, I can put some, you can input the value of mu and sigma or their, or an analytical form of it.
Something.
Yes. Okay, and then I'll give you two examples. But before that, I introduce a popular parameter for testing gravity. It's called gravitational growth index. It's raised by Eric Linder to parameterize the growth rate like this. F of A, F is the growth rate. Okay, growth rate, it's defined as omega matter to the gamma L. L is Linder.
Okay. That's just the definition of that.
Yeah. Just
the,
yes.
The root of the log of delta. Can you remind us what delta was?
Over density.
Oh, the over density.
Yes.
Contrast. No, city contrast. Okay. I see.
Okay. So, and Eric Linder calculated that in GR, gamma L equal to 0.545. Okay.
It is not a very nice.
That's irrespective of the.
Lambda CDM.
So it's
it's for lambda CDM.
Irrespective of the perturbation that you have? I mean, because the over density is caused by this perturbation, right? Psi and the phi fields that you. So, is the statement that, I mean, I don't quite understand, because then the over density will be a function of that particular perturbation. And so, how can you get out a, what is it that you're getting out that's constant?
It says that F of A
will always have this form.
Will be scale independent.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So.
And it goes as a power law. Of the meta fraction.
Okay, all right, I understand. Okay. So that and that
and
particular.
That's an empirical phenomenological conclusion that it goes with a fixed power of meta fraction.
Okay.
But it's very approximate, it's actually not quite true.
Yeah.
One last question, I promise I shall
okay.
Up. Within this parameterization, could you actually include curvature? And could you include other geometries like. Some sort of spherical symmetry or something just by having an effective mu and sigma. Could you generalize it slightly to some other close to FRW type geometries? So you're not doing it for gravity, but you're including maybe homogeneities or.
Yes, I'm not working on MG series, but.
I guess
if
you could
but I'm not sure this would be the best way.
No. Can't you just change the equation to include that? Or?
You mean can CAM do this or can you?
CAM can do it. CAM has curvature in it. You can put non-zero curvature.
Yes.
And you can work with it.
Okay. Just ask.
You can do curvature plus this modifications.
Yes, you can modify the curvature in CAM separately. And this.
I have some reservations about that, but that's a different story.
Okay. Okay, if f of a is parameterized like this, then mu of a can be mapped, it can be mapped onto mu like this. It's high level. Okay. No problem. I mean, if I write this small
definition of mu of a?
No, no, this is not. No, no, it's not the definition of mu. Just
what was mu of a?
Oh, I just introduced it.
That's this modification.
Oh, this.
So now you
same one. Just
that's independent of k then.
Yes, yes. Okay. In this parameterization, it's independent of K. Okay, it's gamma can be mapped onto mu like this in this form. And if I set different values of gamma L, and then I can get the theoretical prediction from CAM. This is CMB or spectrum. Okay, you can see that there is.
So they all agree at large L?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so it's only those cosmic variance part that they disagree.
So at last scattering, there is no growth structure yet. So you don't touch the early inverse by modifying the growth.
Okay.
But at late times.
At late times, it has an effect.
Okay.
So this is what CAM can calculate. This is an example. And this is for matter power spectrum. You can see for different, the orange one. Yes, the orange one is GR. You see, if gravity is modified, then the matter power spectrum is modified.
This means today, or when is this?
When?
What redshift is
it? What redshift is it?
Oh, it's. P of K. I think it's matter now. Yes, today. Today.
It's today.
Yes. Okay, what the different data constraint? Okay. First, CMB. We use Planck data. It can measure the, it can constrain the background because it's the position of the first peak. Okay, and it can also constrain perturbations. Use ISW here. Okay, so ISW it directly constrain mu. Okay, and BAO data it can only constrain the background. Okay, BAO data including MGS 60F. These are the name of the service. Sky service, MGS, 60F, Vigo Z, and EBOS. This is Sloan for Sky service. And RSD, it probes its information of perturbations, like Vigo Z and EBOS. It probes psi. So psi is related to mu, okay? And the.
Sorry, what does RSD stand for?
Redshift space distortion.
Peculiar velocities of galaxies.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Measure them through distortions of the redshifts around the Hubble flow.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. The data form. So what RSD measurements? It's F sigma 8. Actually, if you see the data, it measures F sigma 8 at different redshifts. and weak lensing, for example, dark energy survey, it can constrain background and perturbations. For modified gravity, it directly constrains psi plus phi, that's sigma. Okay, no problem. And H0 Hubble parameter and supernovae, they probe the background. Okay, oh, here's another picture. It's F sigma 8. You see I plot F sigma 8 against Z. You can see different curves. Different curves corresponds to different modified gravity models. Okay, I will introduce this picture later.
What was little f again?
Growth rate, d ln delta, d ln a, okay.
In these models, I assume the cosmic microwave background frame and the frame of co-moving matter is the same. Can any of these codes cope with a possible tilt between the two frames?
Between which frame,
well,
sorry?
The center of the co-moving center of mass frame of the matter and the CMB frame.
And the CMB.
It's normally assumed that they're the same, right? But can any of these codes actually cope with?
You mean it's built in that the background level CMB fixes the background.
And so therefore, the Hubble flow is
Hubble flow is symmetrical with respect, so that CMB remains homogeneous.
So does anybody take that possibility seriously, that there could be a mismatch of?
On the not perturbative, but globally, so that the average meta density is uniform in a different frame,
yeah,
than the CMB is uniform.
It chooses a different frame, yeah.
No,
I don't.
Maybe somebody takes it seriously that I haven't. So
no,
if matter was, let's say,
right,
all,
yeah,
of the fluid of matter was somehow rotating.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you just touch
the,
you?
Well, even just
CMB, I don't know.
I mean, there have been studies that suggest that.
I'm not dismissing it at all.
Yeah, but within these types of numerical code, these computational packages, you probably can't investigate that, I assume.
Not without revisiting from,
yeah,
first principles what might happen.
Yeah. So your opinion is it's not taken very seriously.
It's not part of the mainstream, if that means anything. To be part of the mainstream, an idea would have to help to solve an outstanding issue in observational astronomy, cosmology. So as far as I know, there is no need to introduce that complication into the model. It doesn't mean that possibility is not interesting. Observers don't see it. They want to work with as little.
No, I understand.
As possible. So
yes.
If flat, simple thing works, they don't want curvature, and etc. That's how.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the question, I guess, is from the.
But can you test for the difference between?
Yes,
okay. That's an interesting question.
No, I believe there are studies.
We can think
there are
about
studies.
How to modify,
yeah,
the code.
There are certainly lots of studies, and there are suggestions that there is a tilt between the two. But how seriously other observational people take that claim?
It doesn't
pervade into the analytical work. I don't think it's taken very seriously in model building. And I suspect the observers might have opinions about how statistically relevant these studies are. But they have been done, and they do seem to indicate that there is a possible mismatch. small, but
I mean, yeah. Maybe we can. I'll make a comment later. I think maybe you should finish.
Okay, just ask. And this is an example. For example, if only peculiar velocity RSD data is used, then we can have mu. This is purple. We can only constrain mu. If we only use weak lensing, and we can only, oh, sorry, I forgot to introduce this. Mu and sigma here, and we parameterize these two functions like this. It's very, very simple parameterization. 1 plus mu 0, a to the s. Okay, if in GR, if in lambda CDM, then mu 0 and sigma 0 are equal to 0. Okay, no problem. Okay, here, if we only use peculiar velocity, then we can only constrain mu. If we only use weak lensing, we can only throw sigma 0. If we combine these two, then the degeneracy is broken. Okay.
Are those bands like 1 and 2 sigma bands?
1, 2, sorry?
1 and 2. I mean,
1 sigma, 2 sigma.
1 sigma and 2 sigma.
Yes, 1 sigma and 2 sigma. And the cross is GR. It's in here. Okay, before is an introduction to CAM, the theoretical part of this program. And next is a brief introduction to COSMO-MC, the sampling part, it samples. COSMO-MC stands for Cosmological Monte Carlo. Okay, it's a program developed by Anthony, okay, to explore the parameter space and find the best fit parameters. Here the model parameter space refers to cosmological parameters, modified gravity model parameters. Okay. And it contains likelihood of data. Okay, here I made a cartoon. Okay, CAM is the key module. Key module to calculate observables. Okay, I have introduced, no problem. And we have observational data and other information, and we add them these three to get the posterior probability distribution of model parameters.
Sorry for this naive question, but is this by Bayesian then? And the approach is just Bayesian.
Yes. In this part, we have theoretical values of each parameter. And we have data here, and then we can calculate the likelihood. And then we put that into COSMO-MC, and it random walk in the parameter space to find the best fit.
Isn't it COSMO-MC that computes the posterior probability, likelihoods, and so on?
Well, actually, the likelihood is calculated in COSMO-MC. Yes, it's calculated here. It's a Markov chain Monte Carlo sampler. Inside.
It should be above the box. That arrows go into COSMO-MC.
Yes.
And then COSMO-MC outputs posterior.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, next. How do we probe gravity? Okay, this is what I have done using CAM and COSMO-MC. Okay, this is my first previous work. Defeating observational data with modified gravity parameters. Okay, this is the data set I was using. I used Planck 2015 CFHT lens, okay, with lensing data, and BAORSD, these three.
So does CAM also do this RSD? It includes that?
CAM?
CAM. I mean, it gives you these peculiar velocities.
No, it calculates the theoretical prediction.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So does it do it for the RSD?
Yes.
I mean, for example, I think, as far as I know, CAM does not give you the supernova, does not compute the supernova data. I'm just asking which data CAM allows you to compare with. You think it does?
It depends. If when used in conjunction with COSMO-MC, COSMO-MC and CAM are sort of integrated with each other at this point. So CAM has all the ingredients necessary to calculate anything you want.
Yeah, it could.
Yes. And so COSMO-MC calculates luminosity distances.
So it
yes.
Or whatever else is required to calculate the likelihoods.
Yes.
So CAM doesn't necessarily output it in its default.
Yes, it doesn't directly calculate it.
So COSMO-MC does more than I thought. I thought it was just exploring parameter space.
Well, for example, for example, BAO data, we have DA and H, and CAM can output H, and then into COSMO-MC to calculate DA. Okay. Okay, in this work, I was not using mu sigma. There is an alternative. We have another choice, mu eta. They are equivalent to each other. In this equation, we use the sum. Here we use the ratio. Okay. In GR, sigma equal to 1. And in this case, if we use eta, then eta equal to 1. No problem. They are equivalent to each other. Okay. So in the following work, mu eta is used. Okay, I was using this. Okay, the first thing to do is to do some scale independent models. You see here, mu and eta, they are only function of A, not a function of K. So if they are parameterized this way, 1 plus mu s times a to the s, there are three cases, respectively. S equal to 1, linear, uses a linear relationship to fit the data. And 3, cubic, and float, to marginalize it over s.
Sorry, what was float?
S is a free variable.
Free variable.
So if you validate and then marginalize over it if you want.
Okay, if S equal to 1, you see, mu equal to 1 plus mu 1 A 1 A. Okay, then we got this result. Different colors correspond to different data set. Okay.
These are just from simulation. This is just simulation.
After simulation.
This is from real data. What do you mean?
Okay. This is comparison with real data.
This is what COSMO-MC can give us. Have these contours, you see, use different data. And the deviations, you see, they're in consistent directions, down, right. And if S equal to 3, mu equal to 1 plus mu 3 A to the 3, A cubic, and eta the same. Okay, you understand.
S equals 1, then you try S equals 2.
Yeah, yes.
Then you fit for S.
Yes. Yes. Okay, you see the sigma, the standard deviation, gets larger if compare s equal to 1 and compare and s equal to 3. Because the index gets bigger and the worst constraints on the coefficient. If we let S float to marginalize over S, then we got this contour. Use all the data set. All 18 means I use all the data set I listed just now.
Zero, what is GR? Is that zero?
GR is at the cross.
The cross.
Yes, the cross of the dashed line. So we can see the deviations, the direction of the deviations are in the same direction.
So does that mean that in say s equal to 1, GR is not contained in the
contour? Yes.
So that means that the GR is actually not consistent with the data then. Is that what the statement is?
I think possible deviation, possible.
It's between 2 and 3 sigma, mm-hmm. and we don't take that as any conclusive result. But yeah, it's an indication that there is something.
Something else, okay.
That kind of pushes the best bit away from.
Okay, and this is a Planck collaboration 2018 result. They used the same program, MGCam, as well as us. And they made these pictures. This is their parametrizations. You see, very similar to mine. Mu of z is equal to 1 plus this. If it's GR, then E11 equal to 0. The cross is GR. So they were using MGCam to get this.
Can I ask a question?
Okay.
Yesterday, I actually mentioned the paper by Silk and Nociotti. So they did it differently, right? Could you just give us an indication of how they did it? What would have been different to the way they did it to the way you're presenting it?
I mean, different parametrizations?
Well, you're quoting the Planck results there, right? And you're saying that they used the same program as you. Is there sort of some answer you can give me that indicates how things were different? And the answer might be no, it's not simple.
So Planck has done many different things.
Yeah.
So they start with the simplest model. And they test a variety of models starting from simplest, then simplest plus one complication at the time, then two complications at the time. And for each model choice, they consider all kinds of combinations of data. Planck by itself, Planck without polarization, Planck with polarization, Planck with lensing, without lensing. So they have a variety of tables, like pages of tables of data and best fits. For different models and different data combinations. One of the complications that it adds a parameter is the curvature. So you can have base model plus curvature. And then depending on data sets, in some of these fits, you can see like between 2 and 3 sigma preference for non-zero curvature. It's not something robust that appears everywhere. But if you consider the sum of the tables, you see that.
Yeah.
So the Melchiorian company elaborate on that. So they pick on that particular basket model.
They're selecting which direction to go in.
Yes.
Within this framework.
So this they don't at all look at modified driving. Melchiorian now look at lambda CDM plus curvature. They don't use this at all. They consider different classes of models.
May I ask you both what your opinion of their work is? is it to be taken seriously, or do you have an opinion?
We take
or,
this.
I'm forgetting.
I'm not
words.
Sure if you. That paper came out very recently, so I'm not sure.
Yeah,
that
a few weeks ago.
Yeah. It's as you should take it as seriously as any other 2 to 3 sigma tension that is currently reported. There are several. So there are inconsistencies at 2 to 3 sigma level between data sets within lambda CDMO. So it could be that it's the, just the data, it could be statistical, or it could be that the model indeed needs complication. I wouldn't use the result as evidence for curvature. It's a suggestion that curvature could be there, but it's not conclusive.
Just possible.
What was the radius of curvature they came up with?
Sorry.
It's positive.
Four.
I mean, it's closed.
Close.
Negative curvature.
It's positive.
4% it was.
We call that positive in
okay.
some circles.
4%.
The closed one is, we call it positive.
And then
spherical.
No, I said it on a slide.
Yeah, was it something like 0.0?
No, it's 4%. It was 4%.
4%.
Got the paper in front of
me. But what does that mean,
4%?
Oh, 4%
of what?
Well, no, omega k equals 0.04. Or minus 0.04.
Yeah. Plus minus.
Yeah, so
0.02.
What does that mean? The radius of curvature is 20 times the double scale? That's
cool. I don't know.
But that anyway,
so some.
So the. Depends
on gigaparsecs. I don't know.
So I guess that the. Seminar starts at 2:30,
yes.
Yeah,
2:30.
Oh. Okay, I accelerate.
Okay.
Okay, the next work is to, you can see the redshift range from 0 to 50, and the K range, wave number range, and I put in each bin these two functions. And then use the data to constrain them. And here's the result. This is directly the redshift range in each bin, and mean value and error bar here. The blue one is the cubic model I used just now, 1 plus mu 3 a to the 3. Just use the best fit of mu 3. That's the blue line. And on the right is to do a PCA, principal component analysis, to in the parameter space.
Is it some sort of eigenvectors?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Decomposite them.
This
spins are yes.
You uncorrelate how many numbers you actually.
Yes, these are eigenmodes and eigenvalues. Q is eigenvalue, and there are 5 eigenmodes. They are correlated and they are uncorrelated. So I did this PCA to see how many deviations are there. And if I put these 5 and these 5 together, I mix them, there are 10 eigenvectors and each eigenvalue of the eigenvector to calculate the deviation. It's roughly 3. It's roughly 3 sigma. I'll show that later. Okay, in the next case, both mu and eta, they are a function of A and K. Before, just now, they are only a function of A. Now they are a function of A and K in some modified gravity models. For example, this is scalar tensor theory. Okay, in scalar tensor theory, there is a general parametrization of mu and eta. They can be parameterized into this. There are 5 free parameters now, beta 1, beta 2. lambda 1, lambda 2, and s. Okay, beta is the coupling constant between matter and the force carrier. Okay.
You're saying these forms come out of the modified gravity?
Yes. Yes. This is general for scalar tensor.
This has more parameters than, so in the actual modified gravity theory, all these parameters are related to each other.
But it's within that form.
Yeah, so generally any local theory of gravity predicts mu and eta to be a ratio of polynomial k, because all the k's come from derivatives. And if it's a second order theory, it's up to k squared.
I see.
So that form is very general.
Yeah, this is general. And if for f of r, then we have special value for beta 1, beta 2, s. You see, we have special value for f of r. And there is only one parameter left, it's lambda 1. And we define this as b0. It's proportional to the mass square of the particle.
This is some
force carrier.
Some scalar particle that's in
scalar.
The theory.
Yes, scalar, a force carrier.
Yes. Force carrier, like the fifth force?
Yes, fifth force. And constrain b0. Use the data. Just we put this model into MGCAM and Cosmo MC, and then we get this. If I use all the data, then we can get the upper limit, 2 sigma upper limit of B0 here. Okay, and for a general scalar tensor theory, you see we don't fix these values, beta 1 equal to what, beta 2 or S, let them float. And then we can constrain beta 1 and beta 2 in here. The gray one is for if we set the range of S prior from 0 to 10, then we get the gray one. If we set it from 1 to 4, it gets smaller. I mean, the result is degenerate with the prior we set. And the blue point here, it's GR. GR is here. And f of r, b0, this value, the upper limit, this value is here. OK, the next work is very similar to what I have shown just now. Just now, I used 5 bins. Now I use 10 bins. There is a difference in k. Now in k, we have two bins in k. And do the same thing. This is the results. And then principal component analysis, eigenmodes and eigenvalues in here. And we get the how many deviations, how many sigmas are there of the deviation. And we add them together. For now, we have 20 additional parameters. And the total deviation, the total signal to noise, is up to 4 sigma. As you can see, there are this mode, and this mode. They deviate from the dashed line. This is GR.
Why does it look? It looks like it's consistent with GR. You're saying it's not?
No. I mean, this mode, it's more than 1 sigma.
Oh, 1 sigma. Then.
Yes. If you add them together.
You get 4 sigma. You add
yes.
Them together, you get 4
yes.
Sigma.
Yes.
It's 4 sigma based on chi square change.
Yes.
But you have a lot of parameters.
Yeah, so Hubo, I think, has renormalized chi square,
yes.
Which is not 4 sigma.
Okay, later I'll show that.
Oh, okay.
I think you need to be selective about what you show. You have 5 minutes.
Okay.
So
sorry.
Choose what is most important.
Okay.
Not
all right.
Okay.
All right. I'll speed up. I'll speed up. It's here. For different models, I just showed now, the delta chi square, the signal to noise. Signal to noise is the square root of this. And delta MP is the number of parameters. And here is the average of signal to noise. So from this picture, you can see the deviation it's more than 3, roughly 3 to 4 deviations. If I divide by the number of parameters, then you can see these three, the power law. This one, the power law is very effective. This parameter transition is effective. And for these two, for example, we use 10 parameters, 20 parameters. That's not so useful. It's not so useful to add them. It just improves the fit. Okay, so the deviation can be caused by unknown systematics, new observations, or a new sign of new physics, or it needs to be studied further. Okay, next. This is the heart of this talk. How do we probe the gravity and dark energy from observations? Okay, this is what I did. Reconstruct W.
Can I suggest that you do what I did?
Yeah,
which is that since this will be very interesting to the topic of meeting. Could we just have this at another time? Can we reschedule it?
We can push it to the next session.
We can push to the next session. Yeah, we could do that.
But the next session. Okay.
Yeah. So if you can take half an hour from 3:30, what is it, 3:45? 3:45, if you take the first half an hour, then the next.
Half an hour, okay.
Half hour can do the next.
Yeah. If he's here.
Okay.
So my talk includes a lot of this stuff too. So.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
So we don't have to come to your talk then?
No, but wait, so what have we decided?
Yeah, I think because now there's no time, and this is kind of important, so maybe you can do at least take, how long do you think this part would take? How many slides do you have?
Just for me, I think 10 minutes.
Okay, then that should be doable.
Yeah, why not just do it?
Okay.
Do it now?
Right.
After the break. The seminar is there right now, right? There's a
seminar.
2:30.
Yeah, so there's a seminar now.
Okay.
We will come back after that.
10 minutes is enough.
Minutes
I think.
After that.
Okay.
Finish it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, in this part, I introduced the work of a combination of theory and observation. Reconstruction of dark energy and modified gravity from observations. I put 11 nodes across the whole redshifts. You can see here. It's uniform in the scale factor from 0.25 to 1. It's uniform in A. And there's a large distance between the first node and second. And in the redshift, it's like this. And theorists, they calculate the covariance of the three functions, sigma, mu, and w, sigma, mu, and w, and they provide the covariance. And then I do this 11 nodes, and I use Lagrange polynomial of order 3 to do the interpolation. It's tested to be very accurate.
What does that mean? It's tested to be on this
Yes. I compared cubic spline and bins and this polynomial to do the interpolation. And found that this one is the most accurate.
So I guess
yes. Okay. Okay.
He takes a norm function and
yes, I
knows what the exact should
you know
be, and then compares to different discretizations of that function. And finds that
yes,
it's most accurate.
For example, this one and find some points, and then compare different functions to do the interpolation. Okay. And 33 parameters were added to Lambda CDM. 11 nodes. On each node, there is a set of mu sigma w. Okay. And the basic idea is to add chi-square.
So,
okay.
I know I missed this, but the question is, how do you decide where to put the nodes? Is that just your choice, or that's also a parameter? Or?
Where to put?
Yeah, where are the nodes, yeah. You just decide where
uniform in A.
You just uniform in A?
Yes.
That doesn't look very uniform.
Oh, from after...
Okay, that's not my two. Okay.
After 0 to 0.5.
Okay, I see. Good.
Mm-hmm. You see, on each node, there is a set of this. And then we got, and then chi-square is extended to chi-square from theory and from data. This is from the theory, calculated from this covariance matrices between sigma, mu, and w.
So this one, you just assume something?
No.
Oh, so where does it come from?
I can mention it in my talk, right?
Okay.
That you you generate ensembles of Fornesky theories, and
okay,
you solve equations of motion and project them onto.
So the Fornesky theories, though, I mean the prior in the Fornesky theories is something you're assuming, is that your point?
You use the FT description of Fornesky.
Right, like uniform prior in the parameters or something.
Parameters, EFT. As other polynomials
mm-hmm.
up to nth order until
okay
the results converge. So for each part function, you have like 9 parameters that you run
okay
the vary, and yes, the priors on those parameters are uniform.
There is some variance you have to assume in priors.
But we also go to sort of keep adding parameters until results converge.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is the data set I introduced just now. Okay, this is our preliminary result. Yes. There's a deviation for sigma at slow redshifts here. Yes.
So what happens beyond the shift of 1,000? I mean, do you...
Beyond Lambda CDM.
But is it like, shouldn't it be like S mostly go to Lambda, or is it...
Beyond Lambda CDM, beyond 1,000, we fixed Lambda CDM.
Like a sudden jump then from...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's not a sudden jump.
Yes.
No.
You have 1,000 is CMB.
Mm-hmm.
Matter
like
zero.
But if W was minus 1, but I guess here
W, it's W of dark energy.
How can
it's W of dark energy?
Yeah,
W of everything.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Okay. So the rho is then very small. The
rho dark energy is
yeah
very small
okay
compared to this.
And is there a prior that this W doesn't get very big? Like, does it get positive W offset? Or is that just a thing?
Yeah. What's the prior on W?
Yeah, what's the prior on W, I guess?
You mean the prior range?
The range.
The range?
The range of W.
Minus 3 to 0.
To 0, okay. But it never gets very close to 0, it looks like, right?
You have to speak a bit slower. So, John
yeah,
just moved from China.
Right.
He hasn't
That's okay. No, I'm just
getting used to.
So my question is, does W doesn't get very close to zero, does it?
No.
No. Okay. It's the maximum.
This is one sigma range.
Yeah. Okay.
So the transition is not abrupt at high redshift. If it was abrupt, it could cause problems.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there is a smooth transition, but yes, otherwise it's fixed at high redshift. You can move that high redshift threshold arbitrarily early times if you want.
What I'm surprised by is that you have concerns on W at redshift level, I don't know, 3, and because that's, you would think, I mean, there is very little constraint on W at redshift of 3, for example.
So there's a prior.
Okay, there's a prior that it should be as smooth or something. Is that?
Prior is from the Scovedian data.
Mm-hmm. Good, I see.
So where there is no information.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In fact, do you have a plot where you have prior and improvement on the prior?
Can you explain again the prior? What is?
I
think it's like what we have, except that they have a different, so we have this random Gaussian, this Gaussian correlation thing, they have a different thing,
it has a similar effect, it correlates the values of the function at different times. The way we apply the prior and also the way we get it is different. We get it from theory. We actually do ensembles. We generate ensembles.
And based on some fiducial model or something.
You have a Lagrangian.
Yes.
And let's say you simulate all possible solutions of the equations of motion from that Lagrangian. And project them on these functions.
Which Lagrangian?
Or this.
Some fixed values of
so you look at Kornesky Lagrangian is, as you know, it's very big, but there is an effective field theory description of the background and perturbations in Kornesky theory. So if you just look at FRW background and perturbations around it for the metric, the entire Kornesky Lagrangian can be reduced to 5 unknown functions of time only. And then you can parameterize these functions. We do it in terms of Hadde functions of arbitrarily large order, as many coefficients as you need for the results to converge. And we randomly sample them and generate. So what we're looking for is correlations between values of these functions at different redshifts as predicted by Kornesky theories. So they cannot be arbitrary.
So why don't you do it just with the Kornesky, parameterize Kornesky functions instead of these guys? I mean, it seems that you want to start
because you need to parameterize not just the functions, but all possible initial conditions. If you start with Kornesky, you have a scalar field.
Mm-hmm.
You have, first of all, Kornesky, as you know, has not just parameters, it has unknown functions.
Yeah, that's right. So,
but I think here
you also have unknown functions and you could pick some nodes.
But it's a finite number of unknown functions of time only.
Yeah.
If you go to EFT, you reduce your Kornesky, which is a function of a scalar field, which is each term is a function of phi, or phi is a function of x and t. You reduce that to 5 functions of A only.
You're using up to Z of 3.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because of that data point of
the
Lyman alpha? Is that relevant for this?
It's sort of relevant, yes. But also, just realistically, the surveys that provide information about weak lensing and number counts, etc., they go up to about redshift 3. And then there is no information.
Which surveys are these?
Like LSST,
in the future.
In the future.
Oh.
No, yes, there is nothing beyond redshift 2.5, wherever that Lyman alpha is.
Yeah. And that Lyman alpha, was it a quasar measurement or a Lyman alpha?
It's a Lyman off the course.
It's supposed to be the
tumor. It's Lyman off the backlit by quasars.
Backlit, yeah, yeah. So it's the power spectrum. And it's 1D, right?
I think actually, it's, I mean, there's a different lines of sight.
Oh,
yeah, yeah,
so it's
3D. Yeah, I remember.
So, and that's, you're putting that data point.
That data is there as well. This is the theory. This is theoretical.
Oh yeah, I was.
But the reconstruction includes that as well.
Yeah.
So the final result was those plots you were showing.
And
yeah.
That data point, was that one paper or was that, did they see that in more than one data release?
That data point went away. It went from like 2.5 sigma to below 2 sigma.
The one you like very much, Rafa,
yeah.
The one with negative dark energy.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to ask. You showed W here. Do you have such a plot for rho lambda itself?
Rho lambda.
I have it.
You have it.
Oh, yes.
I can show you. Anyway, if you want to finish your talk, and I'll show you that.
Okay.
Yeah, do you have other things to show?
Okay, for every present lambda.
Okay.
To reconstruct it, I need the covariance of W or X of A, so I can reconstruct it for you.
Right. So we have covariance of X of A, right? So,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, at least in Model 2,
like this.
I have a cause form for it. Yeah, but not X of A, right?
Oh.
It's some. But I mean, for model one, I don't know if
you
can.
I think you do, but it would be if you express it in terms of the volume parameter, the past, the space-time volume, then you have the covariance. You have the correlator for
different model one, right?
Model one. Yeah.
So the for model one, instead of A, you should have a different parameter, which is.
You should have an integrated parameter. I don't know if you can handle it.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be the integral of A cubed dt. In terms of that, you can easily compute the correlation.
I'm sure it can be done numerically for every realization.
Yeah, I'm sure you could get it somehow numerically. But is it?
So I mean,
does it have to be in terms of A? And then could you redo this? I don't know if CAM or Cosmo obviously would let you do this. You'd have to dig into it. Could you reorganize the calculation so that instead of A being your time, or Z being your time parameter, that this space-time volume was the time parameter, the space volume?
If you can map redshift onto that.
Yeah.
If you have a mapping of redshift.
Well, the naive thing is just what I said. You would just say that the volume is integral of A cubed dt, the volume at time t. That's not taking into account the light cone. You could do it even with a light cone, yeah. You could do it either way. But roughly speaking, it would be something like that.
So, I mean, I think that we can think about that, but I think that's, it may not be done, it might not be possible to do it analytically, but I'm sure it should be possible to do it numerically.
I'm sure it could be possible, but I'm just saying, could you analytically replace A as time parameter with B as volume time parameter? That might be possible.
I'm not so sure.
Yes, I mean, if you can provide me with this kind of covariance matrix, then I'm
bit,
okay
it's
too.
It's a bit difficult because it's not a linear mapping from that to, I mean, it's because the volume itself depends on, I guess, A of T, is an integral over A of T, so. Yes, so it's not the linear mapping from.
But if you use the co-moving volume, which would be somewhat different from the one we actually used, but if you use the co-moving volume, it would just mean the dV is A cubed dT. So it's just a local.
Shall we compute this? Since we are, it's something.
So you want to finish with the talk?
Yeah.
Okay, I go
you
down.
Have more stuff to say?
No, I stop here.
Okay, well, then that's fine.
that solution, you need to assume that rho never goes through zero.
Right.
So this assumes that rho is.
That's another reason why W is not a good parameter.
That's one other reason, independent of ever present lambda. Yeah. But in non-minimally coupled theories, you generically have rho effective, which is this quantity. It now depends on the coupling function, which is here. So if you have a scalar tensor theory with dynamical gravitational coupling, depending on what that coupling does, it can make rho be positive, negative, because that's the effective rho. That's what goes on the right-hand side of your Friedmann equation. And then if you naively define effective equation of state, you would get a singularity. And that's generic. If you do it, like f of r, pretty much every f of r theory has that feature. W goes through a singularity. Okay? Anyway, so that's what we're reconstructing this function x, which is by definition 1 today. And this is one reconstruction. So here, actually, you can see how what role the prior plays.
Can you have that?
Yeah, let me try.
Well, screen, yeah.
Yeah. So in the absence of any information from the data, the prior sets this range. Okay? And then as you add data, it improves on the prior. So adding likelihood to the prior gives you posterior that's better constrained than the prior.
Are you including that Lyman alpha?
Yeah, Lyman alpha is here as well. I think it's this something like here. Like, so anyway, so that's the reconstruction that you get for x. And there is a feature like an oscillation, and there is a general trend for it to, for dark energy to be smaller in the past. And I guess naively you would say it went negative, but that's that conclusion depends on what you assume about the prior. So it's not a robust feature. The fact that it goes back, it wants to be smaller in the past is quite robust, and this oscillation is robust. But whether it goes negative or not is completely prior dependent. Anyway, you can see also what we plot here is h in this theory for this x divided by h of the lambda CDM. And we also plot all the data in the same way. So we plot existing data divided by the prediction for that data point from lambda CDM. So it's h really measured, like what's plotted here is measured h divided by h predicted by lambda CDM. And you can see that, for example, H naught has a tension compared to the predicted lambda CDM H. But if you have dynamical dark energy, it has the flexibility to bring it closer. Yeah? And also, Lyman alpha BAO is here. It has this ability to accommodate that as well. And same, you can also map some of the data onto angular diameter. So some data is more naturally mapped onto H, some is more naturally mapped onto DA. So here, and what you see is that the supernovae and BAO have a wiggly structure which seems to be in sync. You have two independent data sets, and they both indicate wiggles with some rare, largish error bars, but it's kind of intriguing.
Is this two sigma? This?
One sigma error bar. Yeah, just one sigma.
No, but I mean, whenever you feed data that has noise, you're always going to see wiggles.
Yeah. But it's interesting that both supernovae and BAO have wiggles in the same place.
Are they in the same place?
Or kind of, yeah.
Tell they're in the same place.
You see. You have supernovae scattered like that, and then you have BAO. Yeah, they don't completely overlap, but there is this a bit. They reinforce the feature. Okay. So I wanted to show you just a little. So that's the key thing that what you asked me about the prior. Yeah, that's the, what you start with, and that's what you end up with. The prior is there to constrain things when there is no data. That's why it's not infinite, because here you really don't have a lot of data. It's not an infinite error bar because you have a prior. I'll elaborate on this tomorrow, and I just wanted to show you different reconstructions. So this is the paper, which you can always look at.
So that's different from that Gian was showing, right?
Yeah, this is different. So this is from 2018.
Yeah, I think I've seen this. Yeah, we discussed this. Okay.
And so there are these different reconstructions. And we do different kinds. So this was just a plain reconstruction, what I showed you, like this one. It's the same thing. But we also do something called evidence-weighted reconstruction. So this reconstruction on the left is for one choice of the prior. You fix the prior and you reconstruct. But you could also ask how much your reconstruction changes as you change the prior. And which can change the strength of the prior in a number of ways. One way you could change it is by changing the allowed width of the bins. And when you do that, you can do what was called evidence-weighted reconstruction, which is this. Basically, you weight by this. So for each reconstructed set, you calculate the evidence. And this is delta x is the strength of the prior. The bigger delta x is, the weaker the prior. And what you find is that when you do evidence-based, and this is the evidence as a function of the strength of the prior, you see that as you make the prior in the limit of delta x 0, prior it becomes lambda CDM. Your model becomes forces x to be 1. So you at delta x, it's lambda CDM. Then you relax the prior. And as you relax, you gain flexibility in your model. And so your evidence becomes positive, and your signal to noise is improving.
But it's never like bigger than 1.
Yeah, so evidence is not strong. I've never said it was strong. But it stays positive. And signal to noise at some point converges. But because you increase the parameter volume, evidence eventually tails down, okay? But what I was gonna say, the final thing, when you do this evidence-based reconstruction, yeah.
Where's the Mac? I don't know.
My fingers are too active, yeah. The interesting thing is that the evidence for like negative dark energy disappears largely, but evidence for this oscillation remains. So the most statistically important feature in this reconstruction is this oscillation, which is kind of interesting, I think, for ever-present lambda.
Isn't this evidence-based thing just pronouncing the oscillation? It's kind of, that's what it does. So.
It's what?
What it does is just, I mean, if it pronounces any oscillations in the data.
Well, it's evidence-weighted reconstruction favors features that are independent of the prior. So as you, Bayesian evidence.
Some technical thing which tomorrow I'll ask you for your definition.
Okay. It's just the integral of your posterior over the volume of the parameter. Anyway.
Is that this, there are all these corrections? AICV?
No, it's not that.
You're not correcting.
We look at, that information is in it because evidence is the integral over the parameter volume of prior times likelihood.
I think an approximation to that.
Well, we can just.
Yeah. So anyway, we can. So anyway, that's the point. I think that's what I want to say.
Does evidence need? Do you need to state an information criteria that you are using?
We use Bayesian bias factors. So bias factors are ratios of evidences.
Yeah, yeah.
So we calculate evidence for a given model and compare that to the evidence for Lambda CDM. And that if the ratio is positive, if logarithm of the ratio is positive, or if the ratio is bigger than one, then your model has more evidence, more support.
But this is comparing, if I understand, again, maybe the main discussion should be postponed to your talk. If I understand, this is comparing model versus model.
Yes.
But not model with given parameters versus model with given parameters.
It compares.
But you're integrating over the whole.
Yeah, it compares model with.
But it's penalized by the number of.
With 100 parameters to a model with one parameter. And evidence allows you to do that.
But it's not telling you which parameter. I mean, if, in the end, if you say the evidence is greater, you're just saying, I think this model is better.
Yes.
But it's not telling you which parameters you should.
Which realization, which parameter values are.
Are there good for that model? We're in there.
Well, that your model has best fit parameters.
I know, yeah.
And that's it. That's your best fit.
It's a different question. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different question. But I think evidence is more to compare models and the degrees of freedom in models.
This particular, I mean, I'm doing this because I have a secret, maybe not secret to some people. I proposed a way of doing this comparison, taking into account the number of parameters, which we can I can explain to you at some point.
I guess
I'll give you a link
to the topic of discussion tomorrow.
Yeah, I can give you a link to the.
Oh, so it's not Bayesian.
It's compatible with Bayesian reasoning.
Okay. It's very interesting.
But it's not this. It's not
evidence.
It's not this, and it's not what you were saying.
I was going to say Sorkian. That's
Sorkian evidence. We need novelty in statistics. So please, yeah.
Do we?
Thank you, Levan.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, thank you. I'll tell you more tomorrow.
Okay. So, Rafael, do you want to?
You were going to.
I don't know how much to say, but I think it's important.
At some point in the program, I saw promise of somebody telling us about perturbation theory. Is that what
that
you were going to tell? Was that wishful thinking?
Yeah, it was wishful thinking, yeah, but
something about